everyone. I'm Jensine Bard, and welcome to Testimony, where truth is told, lives are changed, and hope is given. Revelation 12:11 tells us that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, a testimony of your story for His glory. She was one of 12 who would know the pain and shame of never having enough. Growing up in abject poverty to a home devoid of love and constant strife left my next guest looking for a way out. But how? In her quest to find normalcy, she would drop out of school, marry young, and 3 children later find herself on the brink of suicide. What happened next? Here to share her amazing story, from poverty to PhD, from debilitating shyness to, quote, speaking truth to power, and 5 college and university degrees later, is Pulitzer Prize-nominated, award-winning author, and professor of political science and professor of law at Vanderbilt University, and founder of Be the People, the name of her latest best-selling book. Please welcome Carol M. Swain. Carol, welcome to Testimony.
Thank you so much. It's a great honor to appear on your show.
Carol, it is an honor to have you. When we first met at the NRB convention in Nashville, your reputation had already preceded you. And then I heard you speak. And then I heard more of your incredible story, and I thought to myself, this woman's voice needs to go out to the nations. In part one of our 2-part conversation this week, Carol, I would love for you to take our listener back to those early days, how you found Jesus and what you had to overcome to get there. Carol, would you please tell us that story?
Well, the first thing I would like for your listeners to know is that I discovered Jesus, but He knew me long before I found Him. And I can remember back as a child always feeling like I was supposed to do something, always having a sense of urgency. And there were times in my life when I was very despondent. In fact, there's a poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson titled Tears, Idle Tears, I Know Not Whence They Come, is part of the poem. And I can remember, you know, just being so sad most of my childhood, but there were times when I was comforted, and there was always a tension that I recognize now as having been, you know, part of the call on my life. So even though I was in a circumstance that seemed hopeless, I had something in me that God had implanted that made me feel like I was supposed to do something. And I had encouragement from people that were strangers that sometimes came up to me and told me, someday you're going to be famous. And, you know, I don't consider myself famous, but I do acknowledge that I have gone, you know, such a long way. I've come such a long way from my early roots, and I've surpassed the people that were around me. And for a while, I spent my early adulthood feeling guilty because I didn't understand why my life was so much better than other people around me. And this was the case even during the time when I had not found Jesus.
You're listening to Carol Swain, Professor Carol Swain of Vanderbilt University. Carol, in my notes from you, you share that you were married at age 16 to a slightly older neighbor. You had 3 children, but you were miserable during those years. You had married a Jehovah's Witness, and that resulted in your struggling with deep depression and even suicide. You then divorced your husband. Take us to how you ended up earning your GED, your 5 college and university degrees. Carol, tell us a little bit more.
Well, I want to tell you that during the years that I was a Jehovah's Witness, and they sort of discovered me first, I believe I was around 13, and I had actually indicated in the Methodist Church that I wanted to be baptized, and it seemed as if maybe the very next week Jehovah's Witnesses came to my house, and they were preaching, and they were also preaching and telling people that the world would come to an end in 1975, and I heard that message, and I'm sure it influenced my decision to drop out of school early and to marry and have children, because I felt like I wanted to experience having children, experience a life. I believed them when they said the world would end in 1975, so I took action. And during those years, I was quite miserable, and I was embarrassed that I was a high school dropout. Each time I had a child, I had to put on the birth certificate, highest education completed by the mother. I think I put ninth grade for one, 10th grade for another. I was just too embarrassed, you know, to put down 8th grade. But it was 8th grade that I completed. I started the 9th. I dropped out. And some of the turning points in my life, by the time we reached 1975, I was so miserable in my marriage and in my situation and with Jehovah's Witnesses. I would take bottles of pills, and I would, you know, always make sure I got discovered. And during one of my suicide gestures, a medical doctor in the hospital told me that I was intelligent, I was attractive, I could do more with my life. And he spoke with my husband briefly, and I guess he could just see that we were such a poor fit that he told me, and you can get a divorce. And I had not thought about getting a divorce, and I had forgotten that there was a time when I was really intelligent, that I had excelled in school, even though I didn't attend school on a regular basis. I had forgotten that there was a time when I was smart. And that medical doctor, his encouragement led me to get my GED in 1975. And 1975, the year that Jehovah's Witnesses said the world would end, my world ended. I got the GED. I took a job outside the home. I filed for divorce, and I had my youngest child die of a crib death. And it was such a monumental year for me.
Wow.
Life for me, as I knew it, changed in 1975. 1976, I started a community college. 1978, I got the first of the 5 degrees.
Wow. Now, you say you attained worldly success after getting all of these degrees, but you still weren't happy. You said, in fact, you were never happy. Your life was racked with guilt. Whenever you looked at your siblings, you have 11 of them, and you saw their impoverished lifestyle. You went searching for meaning. You say you looked into New Age and Eastern religions, and that culminated in your having a born-again experience. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Well, one of the things I'd like for your listeners to know is, you know, there's hope and encouragement for everyone. And when I look back over the years, most of the time in my early adulthood, I was depressed. And I was depressed during those years. I was at Princeton University, one of the, you know, sometimes it's listed as the number one Ivy League school. It sort of trades places with Harvard. But I ended up getting a job there. I earned early tenure. I won 3 national prizes, and I was miserable. And I was always miserable. And people joke that if I wasn't winning a prize a week, I was unhappy. But they didn't know that I was unhappy even when I won the prizes, because I was always anticipating, always ahead of myself. And so I often anticipated something, and the only response was relief. If I received an award, I was relieved. If I didn't get it, I was disappointed. And so there was nothing that came from the salary, which was more than I could ever imagine, you know, growing up, that I'd be earning, and the awards. And so after I earned my tenure, it was as if God pulled the rug out from under my feet. It sent me on a spiritual journey, and I was always sincere. I was always a seeker. I always believed that there was something much larger than me guiding my life, but I would not have called to Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I was more one God, many paths. And that was part of that journey to becoming born again and realizing, you know, that Jesus Christ is the life and the way, and no one comes to the Father except through Him. That was what totally transformed my life, removed my fear of public speaking, and gave me this mission that I believe God has called me to, and that is to speak truth to power and not to forget where I came from.
Well, that is amazing. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on Testimony, Carol, because you're a black, single, divorced mother of three. You went from abject poverty to becoming the professor of law and professor of political science at the esteemed Vanderbilt University. Hannity, Fox News, all of the major media networks have you on consulting, talking about race relations, talking about politics. You literally are speaking truth to power. How did you overcome your debilitating shyness? People can accept Jesus Christ, but that doesn't mean all of a sudden they go from overcoming debilitating shyness to doing what you're doing. How did that happen?
Well, what is so interesting to me is that I believe the devil does attack you in the area of your gifting. And so during the time before I was born again, I had an opportunity to be on Good Morning America to discuss my first book. And I turned down that opportunity because I was so afraid. And after I had my born again experience, I realized that the things that I was seeing and the message that God had given me was more important than my self-consciousness, because always before I was afraid that I would make a grammatical mistake or I would have a Freudian slip or something would happen to embarrass me. The focus was always on me.
Mm-hmm.
Once I had the conversion experience, the focus was on the message and how I could best serve God. And I firmly believe, and I guess the evidence was apparent, because as soon as I had my conversion experience, very quickly, I no longer had to clutch the podium when I was speaking. I no longer had to write out everything. I could walk away from the podium, and I could speak. And what has helped me again is that I took the focus off of me, or God took the focus off of me, and put the focus on the message. And once you put the focus on the message and you acknowledge that your life no longer belongs to you once you give it to Jesus Christ, it's not your life anymore. It's His life to use in the area of your calling.
So, Carol, what you're telling the listeners is that you totally surrendered and submitted to Jesus Christ, the power of the Holy Spirit, to work in you what He wanted to work in you for the benefit of others.
I pray to God to keep me on a short tether. I want to be tethered to Him on a very short leash.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Carol M. Swain, professor of law and professor of political science at Vanderbilt University. We're going to pick up next week with the remainder of Carol's incredible story and her journey and how God has called her to literally speak to power, speak to the nations. Thank you and God bless you, and we will talk with you next week on Testimony.
Thank you.
If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, jensinebard.com. Or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony. Is the world of academia lost to a liberal and godless agenda? Or are there those equipped in this arena who hold to the traditional, biblical, and God-laid foundation and purpose our country and nation were originally founded upon? If you are looking for a yes to this question, look no further. My next guest not only espouses to the biblical values that made our nation great, but she takes away every excuse for an entitlement mentality and lays a foundation for true biblical success, as she would discover in her own quest for meaning and purpose in her own life. Would you welcome back to Testimony award-winning author, speaker, professor of political science, and professor of law at Vanderbilt University, and my honored guest, Carol M. Swain. Carol, welcome back to Testimony.
Thank you. It's so great you're having me on again.
It is great to have you, and thank you so much for your time. Carol, last week you shared the unpleasant circumstances of your growing up and how through your relationship with Jesus Christ as a born-again Christian, you were able to not only overcome your circumstances, but conquer them. You were divinely catapulted into the world of academia, a role you never sought, but one that has now placed you on a national stage, to use your words, quote, speaking truth to power. And this coming from a place of abject poverty, as a single divorced mother of three, you were suicidal, one of 12 children, no love, no hope, and no God. So this week, Carol, I want you to take our listeners to the critical issues facing our society today in the world of academia, what you're facing at Vanderbilt. Carol, tell us that story.
Well, first of all, I want to sort of turn direct viewers to my book, Be the People, A Call to Reclaim America's Faith and Promise. One of the reasons that I wrote that book was to really focus on the 78% of Americans who profess to be Christians, and yet they're not taking responsibility for the direction of the country. And within academia, I see a small percentage of people that I would call cultural elites. These are people that are mostly atheists and secular humanists. They assume, you know, that man can solve man's problems, and they are really, they have an agenda that I believe is destructive to our nation, destructive to our young people, and they're the ones that are totally setting the agenda. And within academia, the Christians that are there, many of them are in the closet. And it doesn't matter whether they have tenure, which is a lifetime appointment, or not. Most of them are totally cowardly. They fear man more than they fear God. And I think that is very unfortunate, and it is responsible for the fact that academia has become the lack of morality that you see. It's become a very dark, dark place. It's not a liberal education anymore.
Wow. We had a recent guest on Testimony that talked about the fact that Christians are losing their salt and light in this world. And if we do, then as the Word teaches, we will be trampled under by men. Do you think that's happening today in our colleges and in our universities?
Well, you know something, I think that God is separating people, because at Vanderbilt, you mentioned Vanderbilt, we are in the middle of a religious battle, in the sense that last spring, the university imposed a rule on student organizations, and under this new rule, organizations cannot require their leaders to share their beliefs. And it went even further, because the Christian organizations were the only ones that were targeted. Christian organizations cannot require their leaders to affirm a belief in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, nor can they ask these leaders to lead Bible study or worship. And to accomplish this, the university removed from the student handbook an exemption that had always applied to religious organizations. And about a month ago, they removed the religious freedom of faculty. All of this in the name of political correctness.
Well, how does that happen? What happened to freedom of speech? How do they get away with that?
They say the Vanderbilt's response is, we are a private institution. We can do what we want. Meanwhile, they take more than $24 million a year from the state government and $500 million in federal funds, and yet they are suppressing the religious freedom of Christian students, and it has caused divisions on campus among and between Christian groups, and it has caused some groups are leaving campus. The Catholics were the first to announce that they would be leaving campus, and probably about 14 other groups have decided not to agree to this policy that causes them pretty much to reject their faith principles.
Well, now you have a pretty high-profile position at Vanderbilt. You're the professor of political science, professor of law. How are you doing with all of this that is going on?
Well, one of the things that I firmly believe is that my whole purpose in being at Vanderbilt University is for this moment. I was a tenured professor at Princeton University, one of the Ivy League schools. I could have been there for my lifetime. And God engineered the circumstances that led to my leaving. When I accepted the job at Vanderbilt, I had not had the born-again experience. I had the born-again experience between the time I accepted the job and when I actually arrived about 2 years later. And so I joke sometimes that they hired one person and a different one showed up, because when I did have my conversion experience and I realized that my life no longer belonged to me, I did come with boldness. I was not a closet Christian. In fact, I have a scripture at the end of my email. My colleagues may have, prophets, philosophers, and, some other secular people, mm-hmm. but I have Isaiah 40:31. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall man up with wings of eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
Powerful, and that's what you're doing, Carol. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Professor Carol M. Swain of Vanderbilt University, professor of law and professor of political science, fighting for our religious freedoms at Vanderbilt. Carol, talk about Wiccan that was just recently adopted as a faith-based reality at Vanderbilt.
Well, Vanderbilt cracked down on the Christian students in the spring of last year. And during the summer, they approved Wiccan as a religious organization, which means that for me as a faculty member, if there's a student that is a Wiccan and they ask to have Halloween off, they have to be excused. If I'm given an exam and it happens to fall on Halloween, or if I have a quiz, then that Wiccan student has an approved holiday that would be on par with Christmas or Easter or any of the Jewish holidays.
Wow. What, if anything, can be done to remove, basically, Wiccan is another word for witchcraft?
There's nothing that can be done to remove it. I mean, this was a choice of the university, and they are treating that as on par with the major religions, Christianity, Islam, Judaism. They're treating it on par with that. And you may know that the U.S. Army recognizes Satanists as well, and I'm sure that if we had a group of Satanists and they wanted to be recognized, that we would certainly recognize them on campus, because there seems to be no standards whatsoever.
Well, Carol, right now, what is your main purpose and passion that you talk about in your book, Be the People? I know that there's a foundation by that same name that you head. You changed the name from the Carol Swain Foundation to Be the People Foundation. How can people come alongside you and get your book? And you can address that at the end of our talk. We have a few minutes left. But what are some of the hot issues that we need to be praying about that you're addressing? How can people get behind you?
Well, first of all, I want people in America to realize that we have a constitution that I believe, was God-inspired. There's a Declaration of Independence. Many of us have forgotten, the words that's in the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. I strongly urge all people in America to know what those documents have to say. because I believe that they're deeply, you know, connected to our Judeo-Christian heritage, the things that have the values and principles that have set America apart. And today we have an overwhelming majority of Americans who know that the country is headed in the wrong direction. They see it, and they will point fingers at that government in Washington. And part of the message of the Be the People book is that we, the people, in the Constitution, have to stand up and take responsibility for the state and condition of the nation, because we elect the politicians. They put in those programs and policies on our behalf. And as a Christian, I believe that God will hold us accountable for the actions of those politicians because we put them there.
Carol, how important is this next election, and who should we be as Christians voting into office?
Well, I think, I believe that both political parties have serious problems, but that if I were looking at them objectively, the Republican Party is closer to my values and principles. I believe it's essential for each person to decide who they are, what they believe, and to apply the standards that they believe that are righteous to the candidates. And at that point, they have to vote their conscience. But they need to realize that if God changes not, and he holds America to the same standard that he held ancient Israel, then we are in a lot of trouble.
Exactly. Now, do you believe that if the United States of America does not support Israel, that we will be placed under a curse?
I believe that if we, that America is not just Israel, that there's a whole series of ways that we have deviated from the biblical standards. If you read Deuteronomy chapter 28, it starts with the blessings for obedience to God's word, and it ends with the curses. And if you read through Deuteronomy 28, it looks like America is under some of those curses. It talks about the stranger among you, that means the foreigner, will become the head, and you'll become the tail. He'll lend to you, you'll borrow from him. And it also goes on, you know, to talk about diseases and all sorts of things that would happen to a nation that had strayed from God, including eventual conquest by its enemies.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Professor Carol Swain, professor of political science and professor of law at Vanderbilt University. Her book, Be the People, get it on Carol's website at Amazon or any of your local bookstores. Carol, thank you for being with us today. God bless you for speaking truth to power and for your powerful Christian witness at Vanderbilt and all across this nation. God bless you.
Thank you.
If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, jensinebard.com. Or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony.